Well, good morning and happy weekend before Thanksgiving. I pray your heart is filled with thanksgiving for God's faithfulness and his goodness to you and to all of us. I was getting ready in my mind to open up the 1 Corinthians 7 passage, and a psalm came to my mind from Psalm 133 that says, "Where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? If I ascend to heaven, you're there. If I make my bed in the grave, you're there. If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there your hand shall lead me, and your right hand shall hold me. If I say the darkness shall cover me, and the light about me shall be night, even the darkness is not dark to you, and the night is as bright as the day, for darkness is as light with you. Where can I go from your presence?" What's the answer to that? Nowhere. You can go nowhere outside of the presence of God, which with great assurance we can say God is with us right here. We worship him. He's here to meet with you as you meet with him. In the great measure, your ability to hear from him today is dependent upon your readiness, your own heart's openness to the Lord. And I pray today you'll hear from the Lord. He'll speak to you right where you are. Where can I go from your presence also means that God knows right where you are, geographically and spiritually, emotionally, mentally. God knows you. He sees you today right where you are. And he has a plan for you right where you are. And it's with that in mind that I want you to open your Bible to 1 Corinthians chapter 7, because I think chapter 7 underscores for us the reality that God knew right where the Corinthians were in their vast array of circumstances. And this is a chapter in which Paul is trying to clarify for the Corinthians the questions that they asked, which we don't have, but you get a sense from Paul's answer now concerning what you wrote, now concerning this. And his answers seem to be in response to some question. And there are more questions today. Today it's probably a question about, I'm single. What should I do? I'm married. How should I live? I'm divorced. I'm a widow. And I think there was a sense in the church that once people came to Christ, they said, well, I should really change my circumstances. Now that I'm a Christian, I should probably, you know, get rid of you-know-who. And I should just live for the Lord. Or if they were single, I should really get married. And I think this is the rest of the chapter, which we're going to try to make our way all the way through the rest of 7 today, is sort of an understanding to say, Paul saying to them, listen, this is what I want you to know. Now that you know Christ, there is a theme that you're going to see throughout this chapter. And I hope for some of you who feel restless or are uncertain about your future, what you hear Paul say to this group of Christians in a pagan world asking the question, now that I'm a follower of Christ, what should I do about that? You'll just hear God's voice guiding you in how you should live today and tomorrow and for the rest of the way. So let's look together in 1 Corinthians chapter 7 and verse 17, which we looked at last week. But Paul says there, only let each person lead the life that the Lord has assigned to him and to which God has called him. This is my rule in all the churches. You're going to see this statement repeated again and again. Just stay where you are and lead the life, walk in the way that the Lord has assigned to him. Christians understand that God is sovereign over our life. We have a sense of free will. We make choices every day and that impacts us. But there is also a sense that God is sovereign over our life. When the Apostle Paul preached in the book of Acts in chapter 17, he spoke there that God had made from one man every nation of mankind on the face of the earth and determined the allotted periods and the boundaries of their dwelling. It's an understanding that God understands where all of us are today And you might come in to church and think, I don't even know if God knows where I am. He knows exactly where you are. He knows exactly what's going on in your life. And what Paul opens up this section with, I want each person to lead the life that the Lord has assigned to you, that the Lord has led you to. Where you are right now is where God wants you to be right now. And then he goes on. Was any at the time of his call already circumcised? Let him not seek to remove the marks of circumcision. Was anyone at the time of his call uncircumcised? Let him not seek circumcision. For neither circumcision counts for anything nor uncircumcision, but keeping the commandments of God. This is Paul saying, listen, are you worried about your ethnic status? Are you a Jew or a Gentile? In the context, there were divisions in the church, and probably there were some that says, man, I need to become more Jewish in order to really be a Christian. Or I need to lose my Jewishness in order to be a Christian here in the pagan city of Corinth. Paul just said, no, let everybody stay right where you are. All that matters, you can see, is the keeping of the commandments of God. Verse 19, obedience to Jesus right where you are. Don't try to change your status. And then there's a comment about what you might say is a vocational station in life between a free person and a bondservant. In verse 20, he says again, each one should remain in the condition in which he was called. Huh. Were you a bondservant when you were called? Don't be concerned about it. Now, if you can gain your freedom, avail yourself of that opportunity. So there in Corinth, there were those who were bond servants. It was very common in the Roman world. Some were well-educated. Some were harshly treated. But it was a common status, a vocational reality that there were business owners, there were managers, and there were servants. Some were bond servants. And the variety in which they were treated is vast. And it shouldn't come to our mind first, the experience of the United States in the slavery that happened here, but an indentured kind of service that happened. And Paul simply says, were you a bondservant when you came to Christ? Don't make it your highest priority to get out of it. If you can, great. Verse 22, he who was called in the Lord as a bondservant is a freedman in the Lord. And he kind of turns it on its head. If you were a bondservant when you came to Jesus, you're actually freed. Freed from your sin, you're freed from eternal condemnation, you're free in the Lord, even though you're still in that vocational setting. Were any of you free when you were called? You should think of yourself as being the servant, the bondservant of Jesus. And in this way, he's talking both to the ethnic Jews and Gentiles and the servants and the masters, if you will, or free men and women, and just says, where are you? Each one should remain in the condition in which he was called. Now, Paul's not underscoring this indentured kind of lifestyle. He says very clearly here, if you can get free of that, you should. So when we talk about you should stay where you are, it doesn't mean that we shouldn't try to improve our circumstances in some way. This is one case that's very clear that you could, should, might. But he's really setting up sort of an expectation that I have to be different. I have to change my circumstances in order to be right with the Lord and to be where the Lord wants me. Verse 23 says, you were bought with a price, but don't become the bond servants of men. Verse 24, so brothers, in whatever condition each was called, let him remain with God. I think really what Paul is saying is just don't rush to try to change your circumstances as soon as you come to Jesus. God may have you there for his purposes. God may have you right where you are for his purposes. That's a good thought to think about. You think about Joseph in the Old Testament, and you say, is there anybody in the Old Testament that comes to your mind that probably wished he could get out of his circumstances as quickly as possible? And Joseph comes to my mind of being imprisoned in Egypt, and it's right there that God works and brings about a redemption for Israel, and it becomes a prototype of being in a place that may not feel the best, but God is working there in the midst of it. Look where God's working around you. And remember, sort of the bigger reality is your relationship to Jesus. Everybody clear on that? So there's Paul talking about your status and your station in life. And now he's going to talk about the seasons of marriage, beginning in verse 25. Now concerning the betrothed, I have no command from the Lord, which simply means the Lord hasn't spoken about this in a way that Paul could remember or knew, but I'm going to give you my judgment as one by the Lord's mercy is trustworthy. I'm going to tell you what I think as an apostle. So this is the level of Paul saying, weighing in as the apostle, I'm going to give you my guidance over your present position and your thinking. Verse 26, I think that in view of the present distress, it is good for a person to remain as he is. And that's the fourth time in a few verses where Paul's saying, just stay where you are. And what I want you to see is that because of the present distress, what was going on in Corinth, it was about 10 years from the writing of this book that Nero really broke out and created all the persecution for the early Christian church. And I think Paul saw that coming, and he had already experienced much of it himself. And so he's going to begin to talk from here to the rest of the way of the context in the first century of great persecution on the church, which made him say, you should not be in a rush to do anything. If you came to the Lord as a single person or as a married person or as a divorced person or as a widow, just stay where you are. Follow the Lord. Obey the Lord. And he's going to make provision for change of marital status here also, but I want you to circle in your Bible the word betrothed. Betrothed is the Greek word parthenos. And parthenos was a person who had not yet married, which possibly employed virginity, an unmarried person. But many scholars interpret parthenos as referring not only to those who never married, but also to widows and widowers who had not remarried. And I think Paul is using this word here, the meaning of an unmarried person who are not necessarily virgins is well attested in Greek literature around that time. All that to say that what Paul is talking is the whole category of unmarried, which I think he may specify later in closer proximity to someone who's never been married. But the question they must have asked, because he says now concerning, must have been, what should those of us who are unmarried do? And this is the instruction that Paul begins to give to them. Verse 27, are you bound to a wife? Don't seek to be free. That's underscoring the same message that he's given. One man, one woman for life. Are you married to somebody? Don't try to get out of it. Everybody said, you know, you say, no, that's God's plan for us. Are you married? Don't try to get free. Are you free from a wife? Don't seek a wife. Again, what's he saying? There's a present distress coming. Just stay where you are. But if you do marry, okay, so this is the provision. If you do marry, you have not sinned. And if a betrothed woman marries, she has not sinned. Yet those who marry will have many troubles. There you go. Now everybody says. And I want to spare you from that. So whatever he's saying about marriage is like, marriage is going to be hard. Marriage is going to have conflict. He's moving them to think, God sees me right where I am. He knows me right where I am. I should stay where I am. If I marry as a single person, that's great. He's already made the case of marriage in the plan of God. And for most people, that is the aspiration. I think what he's saying is you should be very careful not to make an idol of marriage or an idol of singleness if you are married and wish I were that when I'm not here. And remember what Paul's saying, just stay where you are. Be content where you are. Walk the life that you are. And God may lead you to be married. If you marry a woman, that's great. If the betrothed woman marries a man, she has not sinned. That's great. Yet those who marry will have troubles in the world. I want to spare you from that. This is what I mean. Not on the screen, but verse 29, he says, the appointed time has grown very short. You can see in verse 29, the time is short, and the present form of this world at the end of verse 31 is passing away. If you're watching, we're not going to pick apart all of these options in here, but what Paul says here is that the time is short, this world is passing away, there are going to be troubles, there is a distress coming. I think he's trying to prepare the first century church for the inevitability of persecution, and he's just trying to prepare them. And so he goes through in 29 to 31, those who are married should think as if they weren't, and those who were weeping as if they weren't weeping, rejoicing if they weren't rejoicing, those with money is not trying to spend it, and those in business not dealing with all of those. He talks about their emotional framework, their marital framework, their business framework, and their financial framework. And he said, you should be careful. I think what he's saying is those things should not be the highest priority in your life. None of those. What's the highest priority of life? This is what he's moving toward. He's moving toward undivided, our series title, attention to Christ and following him. And you'll have emotional times where you weep and you rejoice. You'll have times in marriage which are great and are challenging. You'll have times where you're dealing with finances in great ways or in scarcity. You'll have business endeavors. But you should just think about while you're doing that, that you belong to the Lord, the time is short, this world is passing, don't be over-enamored with the things of this world. I think that's what Paul is trying to drive them through. So and then verse 32, he says to them, I want you to be free from anxiety. I want you to be free from anxiety. Well, that's that's pretty hard to do, isn't it? It's totally hard to be free from anxiety, especially if you're trying to raise a family and you have a marriage and you have a house and you have all of the things that we all have in our world. But he says, I want you to be free from anxiety. And then he begins to explain where he's been going. The unmarried man is anxious about one thing, how the things of the Lord, how to please the Lord. I don't have to worry about a wife. I don't have to worry about a family. My attention is devoted to the Lord. But the married man is anxious about worldly things, how he may please his wife. And his interests are divided. He's just speaking about the reality of the biblical commitment and call on a person's life who's married to love your wife, to raise your children, to take care of your family. And while you're doing that, you cannot be singularly devoted to loving the Lord and serving the Lord with all of your life because you have to serve your family. It's simply saying that there are priorities in life that, you know, we used to try to think we could have, well, it's the Lord first, and then it's my wife, and then it's my children, and then it's my job. But in fact, many times the job has to be done, and you know, my children have to have something first, and it's very hard to balance all of those priorities together. Your interests are divided. I think Paul's just acknowledging the reality of the distress of having a family in the world with many anxieties about raising a family. Can you agree with that? It's hard to keep it all in balance together unless you're single. And Paul's point simply is here. If you're single, you are undivided, and you don't have to have all of that other stuff. You might say, well, I really want all that stuff. And we would say, if you marry, great. You haven't sinned. But remember, their question is, what should I do if I'm single? And I think he's just trying to give them some guidance. Again, verse 34, and the unmarried or betrothed woman is anxious about things of the Lord, how to be holy in body and spirit. If you're single, the one thing you're thinking about is, I want to please the Lord in my life. I want the Lord to be honored in my life. And I don't have a husband to worry about. And I don't have children. And I don't have all of those other anxieties. And so Paul's saying, you're in a great position. But the married woman is anxious about worldly things, how she may please her husband. And I think he's just outlining a biblical priority of how life works around living for the Lord, raising and building a family together in all of its right priority. He is not arguing for the neglect of family. On the contrary, he's saying if you have a family, you need to give them the first attention under the Lord's leading of your life. Here's his summary in verse 36. I want to say this for your benefit, not to lay a restraint on you, but to promote what is good and orderly and secure your undivided devotion to the Lord. So if the question was, should the betrothed, should the unmarried people marry? I'm trying to secure your undivided devotion to the Lord. And yet he's making provision that if you marry, great. Okay, so we're jumping in a context in which they're answering questions. In verse 36 and 37, he does have this explanation of perhaps, it's hard to say exactly, but a connection between people who may have been in Jewish custom already betrothed. Some people think it's a father to his daughter. I'm not sure that that's the right read in this, but there's a statement of behaving properly toward the one you're betrothed to. And if your passions are strong and you really want to get married, he just says, let them marry. It's not a sin. But on the other hand, if you're single but engaged or betrothed to someone, or you think your father has arranged a marriage for you and you're under control and you want to serve the Lord and don't get married, that's great too. Verse 38 is sort of the conclusion of verse 36 and 37. So he who marries his betrothed does well, and he who refrains from marriage will do even better. Says who? You know, Paul's sharing. You'll do better. Okay, why will they do better? Because the world is passing, the time is short, distress is coming, and there are troubles of trying to raise a family in the first century under persecution. I think that's what's in Paul's mind. So he's trying to guide them all there. Verse 39 says, a wife is bound to her husband as long as he lives, but if her husband dies, she's free to be married, remarried, to whomever she wishes, only in the Lord. So if a marriage terminates in death of one of the spouses, the other is free to be remarried, with this caveat, only in the Lord. Marry someone who loves the Lord as you do. And then again, Paul says, yet in my judgment, she's happier if she remains as she is, and I think I have the Spirit of the Lord. And, you know, they might have said, well, thanks for sharing. You know, I really want to get remarried. The whole provision here is you can get remarried. Paul is trying to coach them to say, this is the world in which you're living. And if you're asking the question, now that I'm a Christian, what should I do? You hear this theme, just stay where you are. Walk with the Lord. Make your life a life of obedience. Have undivided devotion to the Lord. If you marry, you have not sinned. Great. Raise your family with undivided devotion to the Lord to the best of your ability as you balance all of life and work and finance and children and marriage. You see, the gospel comes to us right where we are, right as we are. We said this a couple weeks ago, but when the gospel came to Corinth, they were all over the map. And you had people of all kinds of sexual history and marital history coming to Jesus and saying, man, my history is a mess. Now I know Jesus. How should I live? I think you look at chapter 7 as Paul trying to guide them, this is how you live. Now you might ask yourself the question and say, well, okay, I'm single. What should I do? Or I'm single again, and I wish I were married, or I'm thankful I am single. I just want you to think about people in the Bible with me as we kind of draw this down to application for us. People in the Bible who God met right where they are in some of these circumstances, and God used them in an incredible way. Where can you go from God's presence? Nowhere. He knows right where you are. Do you remember the story of John chapter 4, the woman at the well, where Jesus went out to the well to get a drink of water, and there was a woman there who was getting water out of the well, and Jesus asked her, "Would you give me a drink?" She said, "Why would you ask me to give you a drink? I'm a Samaritan woman, and you're a Jew." And they had this spiritual conversation together, and Jesus interacted with her. We don't have time to look at that, but you can in John chapter 4. But the conversation sort of comes to a point when Jesus says to her, "Why don't you go and get your husband and have him come here?" And the woman answered and said, "I have no husband." And Jesus said to her, "You're right in saying, 'I have no husband,' for you've had five, and the one you have now is not your husband. What you said is true." You know, you just get a sense, oh, and she says, actually, "You must be a prophet." So here you have a woman who has a history, five husbands, and cohabiting now with another man who's not her husband, and she meets Jesus. And he changes her life. And he loves her right where she is. He knows who she is. He knows what her life is all about. And he communicates his love to her in such a way that he gently leads her to himself. And she becomes a witness to the good news about Jesus as a person with a broken past. So that in verse 28 and 29, the woman left her water jar and went away into town and said to the people, "Come see a man who told me all that I ever did. Can this be the Christ?" She becomes the immediate vessel in her place of brokenness that Jesus fills and then sends her out to go be a witness. You say, "My life is so broken, God could never use me." Really? How about this? And she goes back into town so that in verse 39, many of the Samaritans from that town believed in him because of the woman's testimony. "He told me all that I ever did." Jesus knows all that you ever did. And he's gracious and forgiving and transforming. And everybody, how about that? I just want you to know that you may come into church and say they're talking about marriage, they're talking about sexual purity, they're talking about God's plan for human sexuality. I have a history. Yeah, great. We all do, and God sees you where you are. He knows you as you are, and his grace is for you as you are, whether you're single, married, divorced, widowed, hopeful, discouraged, he sees you. And the woman at the well, with many marriages and divorces, is a glorious picture of the grace of God. How about the story of Onesimus? Onesimus is told in the book of Philemon. Onesimus was a runaway bondservant. He escaped his master and ran to Rome, and he met the Apostle Paul, and Paul led him to Jesus. And of Onesimus, it actually says that Paul led him to the Lord. "For this perhaps is why he departed from you, Philemon, that you might win him back forever, no longer as a bondservant, but more than a bondservant, as a fellow brother, especially to me, but how much more to you, both in the flesh and the Lord." Paul had been the one to appeal to Philemon, the bondservant owner, and to receive him back. It's a beautiful picture, and Onesimus is called a faithful brother and a helpful worker, and he encourages Philemon to welcome him back, and apparently he does. I just look at it and say, okay, where was Philemon when he found the Lord? He was a runaway bondservant under judgment. He finds the Lord, he returns to Philemon, and he is thought of as a useful person, a helpful brother in Christ. Why? Because God saw him where he was, as he is, and his grace was on him. If you want one more little story, how about the Christmas story in Luke chapter 2? In Luke chapter 2, Anna is found in the temple. at the birth of Jesus, and she was advanced in years, having lived with a husband for 7 years when she was a virgin. So let's say in that era, if maybe 17, could have been 16, could have been 18, but let's say 17, she got married, was married for 7 years, and at the age of 24, she's a widow. And there was a widow then till the age of 84, 60 years a widow. And she did not depart from the temple, worshiping with fasting night and day. Coming up at that very hour, she began to give thanks to God and to speak of him and all who were waiting for the redemption of Jerusalem. And she finds her way in the Bible story of the narrative of Jesus' birth as the widow who dedicated her life to the service of God. And God saw her as she was, a widow, where she was, and he used her. Are you getting the picture? The picture is, it doesn't matter altogether about your history. The book of 1 Corinthians in chapter 7 is to address people who are asking the question, what do I do now? And what you do now is you see yourself, I know where I am, and God sees me. And he asks of me, in light of the culture we're in, is to be obedient to him. He may lead me to be married. He may keep me married, I pray. I may be widowed or a widower, but God sees me where I am, and he can use me where I am. And that's what I think we should think about as we read 1 Corinthians 7.